Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jamie Santos, and I am pro bono counsel for the appellant, Raymond Bellette. We've presented two grounds for appeal in our briefs, a sentencing issue and a suppression issue. With respect to the sentencing issue, we rest on our briefs and simply note that we agree with what this court said in U.S. versus McDowell, that Almendarez-Torres seems inconsistent with the Supreme Court's more recent Sixth Amendment case law. With respect to the suppression issue, this is a case in which law enforcement agents never considered whether there was probable cause before conducting a warrantless automobile search. And the government has tried to make up for this failure with post hoc justifications that have been a moving target since Mr. Bellette's motion to suppress was filed. Because this was a warrantless search, the government had the burden of proving that an exception to the warrant requirement applied. And when the government failed to present sufficient evidence to satisfy any exception, the district court filled in the gaps to find to conclude that three exceptions applied: officer safety exception, the automobile exception, and the inventory search exception. This court reviews each of these conclusions de novo, and each is incorrect. First, well, Your Honor, the government did not raise the standing issue before. No, Your Honor, this court, of course, can consider anything. I will note that that Fourth Amendment standing is not a jurisdictional issue, and in a virtually identical case, United States versus Powell, where the government failed, presented Fourth Amendment standing before the district court and did not do so in its briefs before this court held that it was forfeited. However, I'm happy to address that issue. Mr. Bellette does have standing to challenge the unlawful search of the Pontiac. Mr. Bellette was an authorized user of the Pontiac. In the record, there are surveillance videos of Mr. Bellette driving the Pontiac on the day in question. His mail and his court records were found in the vehicle, as well as vehicle service records with his name on it. And in U.S. versus Rusher, this court held that when there is a driver, when an individual is driving a vehicle, the government bears the burden of proving that that individual was not an authorized driver.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So the respect to the officer safety rationale, like Fourth Amendment standing, that issue is waived. It was not raised in the government's briefs here. And in event, there's no evidence demonstrating a compelling need to search the vehicle or an inability to get a warrant in the 6 hours that elapsed from the time officers entered the property and searched the vehicle. With respect to the automobile exception, the government failed to prove that at the moment Agent Willie opened the car door to the Pontiac, he knew enough facts to reasonably believe that the Pontiac would contain contraband. Geographic proximity to a suspected PCP lab and the presence of two bottles of a common household cleaning product do not, as the government contends, give rise to probable cause simply because the liquid in the bottles could have been replaced with contraband.
Okay, but the car was parked there, and the vehicle had apparently been abandoned. Somebody had been eating some food, left it on the hood of the trunk of the car, suggesting flight, a hasty departure. And there was the police officers understood that a component part of PCP is an amber-colored liquid. So that could have been in the Pine Sol bottle, although it ultimately was not. Why isn't that enough?
Well, Your Honor, let me first address the flight abandonment issue, and then I would like to address the Pine Sol issue. Unless you'd prefer I do it in another order.
No, by all means do, but I also have the question I've taken all together. So your response was indicating that you were intended to address them individually, and I also want you to address impact.
Absolutely.
The collective knowledge of the police, not individual items.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, let me first address collective knowledge because yeah, absolutely. Okay, so not the collective knowledge doctrine you were speaking of. Okay, so I would first like to address abandonment. The government suggests that the existence of food on the vehicle and footprints was indicative of a mid-meal flight, which contributes to probable cause to search the vehicle. But this is incorrect for two reasons. First, abandonment is an issue that's reviewed by this court de novo in U.S. versus Stevenson, this court held, And in every case in which there has been deemed abandonment or flight has contributed to probable cause, in every case we've uncovered, an individual has actually observed occupants of a vehicle fleeing the scene. In U.S. versus Curlow, for example, an officer personally observed the occupant of a vehicle jumping out of the vehicle while it was while it was continuing down the street and running away.
Be allowed to observe, at least at the moment, you're doing exactly what I, for one, hoped you would not be doing, and that is looking at the piece by piece. So is that en route to bringing together the impact of this collective body of evidence?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Rest assured, I will not let you down. So the perhaps a more important point about this flight finding or this flight determination is that in determining that there was flight and in arguing that there was flight, the government and the district court has relied upon evidence that was not known to Agent Willie at the time the search took place. The two fundamental principles of determining probable cause are, first, that probable cause determination can only depend on evidence that is known to the officer at the time the search takes place and not to any other officer on the scene. And the footprints evidence that the district court relied upon was not known to Agent Willie. If you look at page 107 and 108 of the joint appendix, Agent Willie was asked about the footprints, and he said that when he arrived on the scene, he was informed that agents had found footprints and were out tracking them. But with respect to the far-apart nature of the footprints, the freshness, he testified later down on the page that that this was eventually determined that there were, you know, there were these footprints indicating flight.
But isn't the real issue here, you know, that you've got a PCP lab, okay? It's in the middle of the desert, apparently on an abandoned property, with a vehicle that has no tags on it, with a rotisserie chicken, apparently still pretty much intact, I mean partially consumed, but not affected by any animals or anything, sitting there. Why isn't this a situation that gives probable cause for criminal activity, a PCP lab in the middle of the desert with an abandoned vehicle and amber liquid in the vehicle?
Well, Your Honor, and the last point you focused on was the abandonment, and just to quickly wrap that up, the determination...
You really got to address the fact there's a PCP lab
sitting
in the middle of the desert,
Your Honor.
You're not going to get anywhere.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But let me just quickly say that this abandonment determination was based largely on footprints that were not known to Agent Willie at the time he conducted the search, and therefore the only... Yes, Your Honor. So if we put the footprints aside, as we must, because the government did not establish they were known, the only evidence supporting flight, Your Honor, is an entire rotisserie chicken and an entire loaf of bread that weren't eaten at one sitting. And so we submit that that's just the evidence is too thin to support that there was actual flight from the vehicle, when every other case where in which there's flight contributing to probable cause involves someone personally observing someone fleeing. With respect to, absolutely, we would agree this was a PCP lab, and that there was a vehicle on the lab. But, Your Honors, in cases in which there was permission to search a vehicle, there was probable cause to search a vehicle, there had to be some tie between the proximity to illegal activity and the vehicle itself.
Doesn't the amber liquid provide that? If nothing else, the fact that amber liquid is a known byproduct of PCP production, and there were two bottles containing amber liquid.
Yes, Your
Honor. That?
Yes, Your Honor. So here there are two bottles of Pine Sol, but even taking into account that you don't know what the contents are, there are two bottles that. Absolutely. Exactly, Your Honor.
And given the fact that they did know, as I recall, that there were explosives around the structure, the plywood structure, that would seem to me to be an additional factor suggesting the way they proceeded.
Well, Your Honor, this court has held that geographic proximity to illegal activity.
You know, citation
yes.
of authority isn't really what we're asking.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're asking for you to apply the prodigious amount of case law you've assembled in your mind to the facts that are presented and sort of directly engaged on the question.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And let me say that in the cases in which an officer observed something in the vehicle that was indicative of contraband, the marijuana smell cases, seeing a baggie of cocaine, this case is far afield from those cases because you have a bottle whose contents even just facially match the label. I think this case is much more akin to the air freshener cases.
Does it matter at all? Wasn't discovery inevitable anyway?
No, Your Honor. For the inevitable discovery doctrine to apply, this is the inventory search exception, the government would have had the burden of proving two things: the existence of a standard impoundment policy and the existence of a standard inventory policy that would have contained standardized criteria pursuant to which a search could occur.
An abandoned vehicle near a PCP lab, just sitting.
Well, Your Honor, this is not something that Mr. Bellette had the burden of proving. This is something that the government had the burden of proving. And may I add that this is not a difficult burden to establish. It's common in U.S. versus Matthews.
Wouldn't DEA, I guess, really testify to the existence of an impoundment policy?
No, Your Honor. The only testimony that he provided... That's incorrect, Your Honor. On page 110 of the joint appendix, the only testimony that exists regarding impoundment or inventory is when Agent Willie said, there was no one there to claim the vehicle, so we were going to have it impounded. That is very different from the cases in which there has been testimony that's not only discussing the existence of a policy, but dictating the ways in which that policy cabins officers' discretion. Well, that's the inevitable discovery doctrine is a broad doctrine. Yes, but
there are cases which I can think of offhand in which there's been even less testimony about the existence of an impoundment policy.
Your Honor, every case that we have found, U.S. versus Matthews, every case involves either officer testimony detailing the standard procedures or the submission of the actual policy itself. And U.S. versus Brown, even though it wasn't a policy of that particular agency, the Boston Police Department's policy manual was submitted. So this is not a heavy burden to meet. The government simply had to provide evidence, and they didn't do so, perhaps because this wasn't even an issue they raised in the district court. This is an
in-circuit precedent for that authority?
For the principle that you have to submit a policy?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. U.S. versus Brown, U.S. versus Cartrett, U.S. versus Matthews, in all of those instances, a written inventory policy and a written inventory and an impoundment policy were provided.
That wasn't my question. My question was, do you have in-circuit authority for the proposition that they had to be? That's my question.
Yes, Your Honor, those cases all...
Oh, that there has
yes,
to be.
Yes, and Colorado versus Bertin holds that as well. And, Your Honor, if I can just revisit the amber-colored liquid...
And those are all Fourth Circuit cases?
Yes, Your Honor. Colorado versus Bertin is a Supreme Court case. The others are all Fourth Circuit cases. If I can briefly revisit the amber-colored...
They were involving inventory searches.
Yes, however, in order to inventory a vehicle, you have to have lawfully impounded it. And so you have to prove both policies. That's what this court said in U.S. versus Matthews.
It's not an inventory search.
I'm sorry, Your Honor? Okay. So with respect to the amber-colored liquid, we submit that this case is much more similar to the air freshener cases. When you have a common household product, the household product has to be used in a suspicious way to provide probable cause to search. And so in U.S. versus Palmer, for example,
But there's no evidence that air fresheners are a component of a drug, is it?
Well, Your Honor...
Air fresheners are used to obscure the sensory... effects of the presence of drugs. They aren't component parts of drugs, so I don't think that analogy holds up.
Well, Your Honor, we're unaware of any case in which, for example, a pack of cigarettes sitting on a car in a high drug outside of an open air drug market would be probable cause to search the car, simply because sometimes people replace the cigarettes with marijuana joints.
Here, you have a PCP.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, and we still believe that probable cause to search the vehicle has to have a tie between the illegal conduct and the vehicle. And if the only tie here. Because, Your Honor, if you have a normal household product in normal quantities. Absolutely. Absolutely, Your Honor, and we are certainly not ignoring the outward circumstances. However, I think that there still needs to be a tie from the vehicle.
I've given you one,
Your Honor. If it's okay with you, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Of course. Oh, did you? I'm sorry. Mr. Packard?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Michael Packard on behalf of the government. As was laid out just a moment ago, there are two issues here. We have the sentencing issue that the appellant has raised, and we have the evidentiary issue. The government believes that the sentencing issue ought to and can be disposed of quickly by this Court, so we'll stand on our papers there.
Yes.
Let's go right to the evidentiary
question.
Yeah,
it's question. A preservation, it may be just a preservation point.
Agreed, Your Honor. So as to the question of whether or not Judge Titus erred when he denied this motion to suppress. The government submits the answer is no, that he was eminently correct on multiple bases. As Your Honors know from the record, Judge Titus denied that motion on several points, two of which the government focused on in its briefing. So those are the ones that I'll focus on now, although I'm happy to address questions about His Honor's other bases, those being abandonment and the public safety exception. Our briefing is focused on the question of the automobile exception and, as a backstop, the inevitable discovery doctrine. And if it's okay with you, I'll start with the automobile exception. The question is whether that vehicle was readily mobile and probable cause existed to believe that contraband or evidence would be found inside that car. When Judge Titus held that it was, he made a variety of factual findings. And those factual findings, as the Court knows, are entitled to very deferential, clear error review. He found that the property where the Pontiac was found was a lightly populated area being illicitly used by trespassers and was also an area where, in the past, neighbors had complained about chemical smells. He found
Could
that when the police...
slow down just a little bit?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Thank you.
He found that when police responded to that area in the middle of the night, those involved in the PCP production saw the police coming and they, quote, made tracks and left everything right there. Judge Titus described this scene as the classic uncovering of an active PCP lab where everybody involved in it hit the road or made tracks in the middle of the night. He's made that same point four or five different ways in his colloquy. He also found this Pontiac had been abandoned by one of those individuals involved in the production of PCP. He described that car as, quote, an unlocked vehicle left by a person who was obviously engaged in the production of PCP who made haste to get away from being detected as to their involvement in it. He further recognized that in plain view within that Pontiac were two bottles that looked to an experienced narcotics investigator like PCP, an amber liquid. Judge Titus noted that while these were found to be innocuous, quote, you can't tell until you open the bottle, which is a point I think you made, Judge Duncan, during the appellant's piece. Given all of this, he concluded it would have been, quote, absurd for the officers not to open that car and inquire as to its contents. None of those conclusions, Your Honor, were erroneous, let alone clearly erroneous, and they provide an ample basis for the finding of probable cause to support the automobile exception. That basis is found in the testimony of DEA Special Agent Brian Willey and the various exhibits submitted to him, which also appear in the supplemental joint appendix that was presented to this Court. He testified about the gallons upon gallons of PCP production chemicals found at this shack in the middle of the desert. Indeed, some of those buckets contained PCC crystals, which, as he testified, are byproducts, parts of the PCP manufacturing process.
Did you say neighbors? I mean, isn't it in the record that neighbors had complained before about the property?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So how is it in the middle of the desert if there are... I don't doubt that it's in the middle of the desert, but it's not... I mean, the way you portray it is painting it as though it's in the middle of nowhere, nobody else around. Clearly, there are other people around, right? There must be neighbors.
So there are neighbors. It's perhaps a question of where one's from in the country. Neighbors in the city are right on top of you. Neighbors in the desert might be hundreds of yards away.
Right.
And they're still your neighbors, but chemical smells waft. And I think the pictures submitted in the supplemental...
I just wanted to understand. Yeah, I looked at the pictures in the supplemental, and
So that's the issue, is that the neighbors who were there, again,
who
were somewhere around, complained about the smell. And officers had been to the scene before and saw in a different area of the property gallon drums, things of that nature, that would have suggested a potential PCP operation. So they told the neighbors to call him back, which is exactly what happened on the night of this search. He also testified that after they were called that night, officers didn't exactly do what they were supposed to do, which was just check on it. Instead, those officers bounded right over, making it obvious to the bad guys that the police were coming. As those headlights came over that ridge, their logical inference, drawn by Judge Titus, is that the bad guys saw the cops coming and took off on foot into the desert.
You know, your description is very colorful. If you could just stick a little closer to language that I'm accustomed to, I would appreciate it. So there are these people who ran from what appeared to be the scene of a crime. And they may well be bad guys, and I'm probably splitting hairs. But I don't watch Westerns, and I just like the more traditional terminology.
Fair enough, Your Honor. My apologies. The individuals involved in producing PCP fled into the night away from oncoming law enforcement. Contrary to what appellant counsel stated, Officer Willie testified that the tracks leading from the scene were, in fact, known to law enforcement before that search occurred. When he arrived, officers were following the tracks, and Officer Willie testified that the search did not occur until the morning when they were actually able to see things, at which point they did have an understanding of these fresh tracks, which, according to his testimony, which was unchallenged, appeared to begin with a sprint and then shift about a mile away into a different gait, more indicative of walking. In addition, there was a hat that was testified to, found along some of these tracks, next to a deeper footprint, suggesting somebody fell during that headlong flight, and a backpack that was also abandoned during this headlong flight from the scene. Furthermore, the officer testified about the cars that were found right next to this active PCP lab. One of those cars was a pickup parked next to the Pontiac at issue. That pickup's rear door was open and filled with materials, boxes, bottles, buckets. The Pontiac itself also unlocked with someone's half-finished midnight snack sitting on the trunk. In the front of the passenger seat, in plain view, were three cellular telephones, among other items. And in the back seat, also in plain view, he testified, were those two bottles of amber liquid that looked to him like PCP. And again, as this court knows, an experienced officer is entitled to some deference. And this is a very experienced officer. At that time, he had approaching 9 years of experience with the DEA, as well as 9 prior years on local law enforcement. He reasonably believed that was PCP. Reasonable to believe, whether that was PCP or not, that other evidence of criminal activity would be found in that car. Given that mountain of evidence, Your Honor, we suggest that there was clear probable cause. And we'll note that one of the cases, or perhaps the case, cited by the appellant to say there wasn't, is the Patuca decision from this court. And we would recommend this court find these cases bear no resemblance to each other. First, as a procedural matter, in Patuca, the district court granted a motion to suppress, which matters because this court views facts in the record in the light most favorable to the prevailing party. In Patuca, that's the defendant. In this case, it's the government. Second, those facts are wildly different. In Patuca, there was little more to suggest illegal activity was afoot than a driver's faulty recitation of personal information in the presence of a credit card reader and a few iPads. Here, there is nothing so threadbare. I think the court made the point of trying to look at the circumstances in the totality to not lose the forest for the trees, and that's exactly what we would ask the court to do in comparing this case to Patuca and any other that the appellant might cite in support of its position. This was not a search of a routine traffic stop where a cop happened to look in the back seat, see a couple bottles of Pine Sol, and have a hunch it might be PCP. This is the search of a recently abandoned vehicle right next to a recently abandoned PCP lab in a remote desert location, gallons of chemicals related to PCP strewn about, and footprints leading from the scene into the desert. The Pontiac itself appeared to be recently occupied based upon the chicken, bread, and Doritos on its trunk, its unlocked doors, and the personal effects to include three cellular telephones in plain view on the front seat. The defendant has tried to make a point of the fact that the Pine Sol bottles turned out to just contain Pine Sol. But it turns out ex post facto rationalizations both can't help the government and also can't help the defendant. The question is, at the time the search began, were the officers reasonable in believing those Pine Sol bottles could be PCP and that there could be evidence or contraband in that car? And the answer is yes, based on all the factors testified to by Officer Wiley that I've summarized. If the court has no further questions as to PC, I'll note that because there is probable cause and the automobile exception applies, we don't think the court needs to go any further. But if the court has questions, I can address the inevitable discovery doctrine, too.
I was interested. Oh, yes. Okay, so help me with the extensive list of cases that the appellant cited for the proposition that there has to be the introduction into evidence of an impoundment policy in a case involving inevitable discovery as opposed to an inventory search.
Your Honor, sit on the exact point. Every single case just referenced, Brown, Matthews, Colorado v. Bertine, were inventory search cases. And the question was concerning the scope and propriety of those inventory searches. I will note, however, as an officer of the court, that there is a case that's a little closer that might be more helpful, and because that's my job, I'm going to bring it to your attention. That's United States v. George, 97, F. 2nd, 113, 4th Circuit, 1992. And there, the question was whether inevitable discovery could apply to an inventory search that would have occurred later. The court rejected the application of the inevitable discovery doctrine there under very different facts. And here's the difference. There, the question was whether a toolbox at issue in the car that was searched would have been inevitably discovered during an inventory search. And the government submits that in a situation like that, where the permissible scope of inventory search is at issue, then the government would have a harder time based on the relatively thin record here. But in this circumstance, when the evidence at issue are three cell phones sitting in plain view, and a couple of pieces of paper located not in any locked containers that the government's aware of, I believe that they are a combination of plain view, and there may have been one or two in the glove compartment. But these items would be discovered under any inventory search. Officer Willie testified the car would have been impounded. That testimony was unchallenged. And it makes eminent sense, because as Judge Titus recognized, you cannot leave a car at an active crime scene. And Judge Duncan, that was your point as well. It's well taken. Judge Titus also recognized that if a car is going to be impounded, it will be inventory. And while there might be cases where the scope of an inventory should matter, the government submits this isn't one of them.
I thought the whole point of a standard protocol doctrine was that a standard protocol could support an inventory search. In other words, we always do it in these cases, that while it may be sufficient, I don't know that any court says that it's necessary. Are you saying that we have cases that say that it is necessary, an inventory search can never be approved without it?
No, Your Honor. To make it clear, I'm not aware of a case that says without that, then it's over. I'm not aware of that. I think usually it comes out, those policies are presented when there are close questions. And here I don't think there was a close question. And it's true, the issue wasn't briefed at length before Judge Titus. But that doesn't mean the record he had wasn't adequate for him to make the decision he made. Unchallenged testimony by an experienced officer who, I'll make this point, was both a federal agent with the DEA and affiliated with the Los Angeles Impact Team. That's a has both local and federal components, demonstrating his familiarity, we would submit, it's implicit, he's familiar also with local procedures. And on this record, we believe it also would have been inevitably discovered. If there are no further questions, I'll have a seat.
I do have a question. Given that you're hanging your hat on these the inevitable discovery and automobile exception, you must then recognize the flaws in your officer safety argument. That is, they hung around there for 5 hours.
I think, Your Honor,
common sense would indicate they weren't real concerned about something exploding.
I think, Your Honor, the one factor that might weigh in Officer Willie's favor on that point would be when the sun comes out in the middle of the California desert, chemicals might react differently if they're seated in a car where they're being heated, and perhaps that would be an impetus to search it.
Is that what he said? Because that would sound very disingenuous if he did.
It is not what, he said, and I'm just based on the record, if we are looking at the factual findings in the light most favorable to the prevailing party, that's the best inference I can present to you.
Doesn't make any sense.
Well,
I just wanted to...
And certainly it's not our best argument, which is why I believe it was not briefed.
Actually, I would leave a bottle of wine in a car overnight.
I would never leave a bottle of wine anywhere.
Well, I can't conceive of that either, but
I'm with, the government is with Judge Thacker on this
point. It would be far less at risk.
Right.
This is interesting. Far less at risk overnight when it's cool than during the day if the temperature goes up. That. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions on point?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors. Briefly to address one point, because I think there may be confusion, the inevitable discovery doctrine only applies if there could have been an inventory search, and the inventory search exception only applies if there were standard policies in place. With respect to the probable cause...
You can have an inventory search without having standard protocols. I mean, as a protective measure, as a liability measure against claims against property, virtually every police department has them. But why, as a matter of law, do you have to have evidence of a protocol to support an inevitable discovery argument?
Because, Your Honor, the inventory exception is meant to, the requirements of showing a standard policy is meant to separate cases of suspicionless rummaging from cases in which there is an administrative search that happens the same way in every case. To be sure, there need not be a written policy, but there at least must be a standardized protocol to ensure that officers, this court has said before, don't use the inventory exception as a ruse to rummage for evidence.
As a fishing expedition.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Is there a realistic argument here that this was being used, that this could have been used as a fishing expedition?
Well, Your Honor, certainly with respect to the glove box, the policy that you'd have to prove would have to require or allow the officers to search the glove box, and there are policies that don't allow that. But if I may move back to probable cause very briefly, we note that the government provided a variety of evidence to support flight and probable cause that they failed to establish were known to Agent Willie: the Stage 2 crystals, the footprints, the backpack, the hat, and they failed to establish a timeline in the district court. And may I say that demonstrating a timeline to prove probable cause is not a difficult thing. It happens all the time. The officer asks, why did you conduct the search? And the agent says, because I had probable cause, and here are the facts that I knew.
If the motion had been denied, it would be one thing, but you didn't. And so we're reading that evidence in the light most favorable to the government, aren't we?
Yes, Your Honor, but that means that if there's disputed evidence, it has to be taken in the government's favor, not that that the evidence can be filled in with facts that weren't in the record. And, Your Honor, here on page 110 of the Joint Appendix, the government counsel asked Agent Willie, why did you conduct this search? And he said, three reasons. First, because no one was there to claim the vehicle, so we were going to impound it. Second, because we didn't know what would be in there. There might be ether. There might be magnesium casings. And third, because he wanted to know who the registered owner was. None of those things constitute probable cause. There was no mention of pine sol. And because Agent Willie never even considered whether there was probable cause to search the vehicle, it is no surprise that the government could not establish a timeline of what he knew and when. Now, my friend on the other side said, well, other officers on the scene knew it. But under this court's decisions in Patutka and U.S. versus Massenburg, the collective knowledge of all officers on the scene cannot be taken into account in determining whether probable cause exists. Your Honors, also, let me say that we understand that pine sol can contain, a pine sol bottle can contain anything. However, when we're talking about probable cause, which is a higher standard than reasonable suspicion, we submit that the existence of two bottles of a common household product.
They didn't know it was a common household product.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. However, facially, the contents of the bottle matches the label. There was nothing on the bottle to indicate, there was no tears, there was nothing on the bottle to indicate that it had been replaced with something else. And if I may give some examples of things that might have constituted probable cause in this circumstance, if, for example, there were a whole bunch of empty bottles of pine sol at the PCP lab, that perhaps would have provided some connection that these common household products were actually being used in a suspicious way. That probably would have pushed the ball over the line into probable cause territory. Or if, for example, there was an unusual quantity of pine sol in the cars. If there were 10 bottles of pine sol where the labels were ripped or they were discolored or whether the liquids were of varying colors. However, two bottles of pine sol is not a suspicious use of a common product. In closing, Your Honor, this record is devoid of everything that one would expect to see from an agent conducting a search, deciding whether the probable cause exists, and at the motion to suppress hearing, where counsel failed to establish policies, I see I'm out of time. May I finish just the sentence?
Just a sentence, yes.
Okay. Where the government failed to establish any impoundment policy, any inventory policy, any evidence of an exigent danger, or any timeline for what Agent Willie knew and when. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We will ask the courtroom deputy to adjourn court sine die and come down and greet counsel.